Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
You will see the biggest deficit ever forecast in these figures. And we are looking somewhere north of $200 billion. And you can see for a coalition backbench that has been talking debt and deficit since Tony Abbott, like, these are extraordinary figures. This week, the total gross debt will go past $700 billion.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Australian Politics Live. You are with Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and in the pod cave with me are two wonderful gentlemen.
G'day.
You sure?
We've really confused Shane Wright. Anyway.
It does not take much to confuse me, let me assure you.
Shane's lost it already and we're less than a minute in. Anyway, to my left is Shane Wright, the... I always do this. I always pause significantly because you're not economics. No, you're not economics editor.
Ross Gittin would have kittens. The SMH's readership would go, what has gone
on? It's the Gittin's effect that pauses me every time. But you're an important economics correspondent.
Apparently,
yes. Well,
I can count. That's it. That's the special skill.
That is a well-known fact of you, Shane. Shane Wright. From the artists normally known as Fairfax, but now the
Let's
Nine.
Let's go the Age and SMH.
Yes, the Age and SMH, important economics correspondent.
Yes.
You're not going to give me your actual title, are you?
Senior economics correspondent.
Thank you, senior economics.
I was waiting for this.
Sorry, Dals. Anyway, we do this on every economics podcast. You can tell what the subject of the pod is today anyway. And to my right is Paul Karp, who is in my team at Guardian Australia and all round, well... I don't know, expert about skills and legal matters.
Job trainer, job tinker, job soldier, all of them.
Job spy. Yes, exactly. Anyway.
I'm thinking like the movie K2 Widowmaker. Like we're getting into these sorts of terminologies now with all these descriptions.
Well, look, before we move on to the chat, in case we've lost you by our stupid banter and in case you haven't been following closely, our job banter relates to the ever-expanding program of interventions on the part of the Morrison government. We have job seeker, we have job keeper, we have job trainer, which we'll talk a little bit about today. This is one I'm missing, though.
Job maker.
What was job maker?
Job maker was when he went to the press club, and it was a lot of the same material as today about adding conditions to federal funding on skills to the states.
Yeah.
But it was called job maker when he first did it a month ago.
Okay.
And now it's job trainer.
Is there home maker?
Home builder.
Homemaker sounds anti-PC for The Guardian, let me tell you.
Exactly. There is home builder, isn't there? That's the renovation one.
Yes.
Yes. Have we covered them all?
The lot, I think.
There are, in all honesty, more than 100 separate things going on. And even the government is having trouble
keeping up, yes.
And the dictionary is sort of running out and the thesaurus is running out of descriptors for what they're up to.
Perhaps we could open the book for the pod listeners. If you can get in touch with all of us. We're all very traceable on social media. If you've got any thoughts about the next iteration of job open brackets, dot, 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 close brackets.
Insert word here.
Insert word here. Get in touch. But anyway, we'll start with something simple, the labour market. Shane.
Jobs.
Jobs, yes. So on the day we're recording, which is Thursday, we have had the Australian Bureau of Statistics give us the latest snapshot of the Australian labour market, and that is the numbers for June. Shane takes up the story.
It's one of the more interesting jobs reports that you'll ever see because a series of records, both good and bad, have been set on the one day. Biggest increase in the number of jobs in a single month, 210,000. Biggest increase in hours worked in a month, 4%. Biggest increase in participation rate in a single month, about 1.3 percentage points. Yoo-hoo!
Mm.
And Scott Morrison was talking about it's Australia's fighting back.
Yes.
But then I went to my ancient, is it Greek or Roman, with King Pyrrhus to talk about be careful for these great victories because I don't know if I can afford anymore because on the other side of the ledger, there are now 992,000 people unemployed. It's the highest number ever unemployed. We have lost somewhere around 360,000, 370,000 full-time jobs in 4 months. That is a record for a collapse in full-time employment. Mm. Of the 210,000 jobs that were created, all of them and a few more were part-time as people came back into that, particularly where you'd expect we're talking about accommodation and hospitality, those part-time jobs have started to come back. You have the highest unemployment rate since 1998 at 7.4%, and it would be, by my calculations, north of 12%.
Yes.
Once you take into account, let's see, the 370,000 people who've just disappeared from the jobs market, they aren't there.
Are they? Yeah, because I did write the news today, but I didn't have time to delve to that extent. So, because participation improved, but there's still a bunch of people sitting out.
Oh, yeah, close to 400,000. There are 230,000 people who were considered employed, but they didn't lift a pen, didn't serve a coffee, didn't make a bed.
0 hours.
0 hours.
0 hours.
So you would start adding them in. Then there's another about million people who said, right, I didn't have enough, I need more hours. That includes 130,000 people who fit the description of full-time.
Mm.
They worked more than 35 hours. But even these 130,000 said, no, I need more hours. You've got Western Australia's unemployment rate hit 8.7. It's the highest since 94. Victoria and is at 7.5, highest since 98-ish. New South Wales is at 6.9, highest since about 98-ish. So there's all these other, threads going on, and we know that this was taken at the best possible time. This survey, it's about 30,000 to 40,000 people were surveyed in the first 2 weeks of June. So before Victoria, before we started working out all the postcodes of Melbourne and knowing that we're going to shut down, knowing that before we shut Victoria off down at the Lincoln Causeway in Albury-Wodonga, that all takes place post these things.
Mm.
So you can, before we started talking, whether we're going to have an AFL grand final in Brisbane.
Yeah.
So that will feed into July. So that means, right, a couple of things. One, it's probably going to get worse through July. It pushes back the recovery and it puts more focus on what happens in September when JobKeeper ends and the coronavirus supplement, which goes to job seeker, parenting payment, recipients, people on farm, household income support, people on youth, kids on youth allowance.
Yeah.
That all ends around the same time. So you've just pushed everything back.
Well, there's a cliff instead of, well, you know, the cliff still looms basically. Well, unless the government can, you know, make it not a cliff, but
the cliff is
something
has got taller.
Precipitous. Mm. Yes. Well, before we analogy ourselves to death, if that's even possible, we will come back to that thought in terms of income support and what happens next. So that's a pretty eloquent picture. We might go to Paul now and skills. So the day before the unemployment numbers were released, the government briefed on a major skills package, a $2 billion odd investment that includes potentially some matching contributions from the states that will happen if the states accept an overhaul of vocation, education, training, architecture. It's pretty obvious from the picture, Shane's just given us, you know, why you would do that in terms of the conceptual thing sitting behind it. But what did you make of that?
Well, I think they knew that the unemployment figure was going to be bad, and they wanted to be able to point to something to say that they are trying to keep people in work, and that there are options for school leavers that aren't going straight onto to job seeker. So the two main planks of the policy are it's $1.5 billion expanding the wage subsidies for apprentices, so that it's not just apprentices employed by small businesses, but now also
larger folks
that can get up to 50% of their wages from the government now, up to a capped amount of $7,000 a quarter. So that is not trying to encourage new apprentices. That's just trying to stop the system going off a cliff of cancellations of apprenticeships and employers dropping them. So it's a very defensive move, just trying to keep existing apprentices attached to those jobs before we even get to the conversation of, like, how do you get more apprenticeships created?
Yeah, it is interesting that it is a sort of, as you put it, I think correctly, a defensive measure, because it doesn't sort of create an incentive for employers to put on more apprentices. It just creates an incentive for them to keep the apprentices that they already have.
I was going to ask, Paul, I thought there's a suggestion that, because this is a policy that was announced in March, that the take-up rate hasn't been what was expected as well, and that people are laying off apprentices. So this is not just defensive, but hold on, Houston, we've got a bit of a problem here. It's not working quite as what we'd expect, which is exactly what you'd expect, that there are all these policies being thrown together.
Yeah.
Some may not work as you'd expect.
Yeah, well, so the first $1.3 billion kept 80,000 apprentices in work, but 16,000 have had their apprenticeships cancelled or been laid off since. So the policy also tries to put the the jack back in the box by getting a different employer, a new employer, to pick up those people who've had their apprenticeships cancelled. Because once an apprentice qualifies, if they were employed on the right date, they're eligible for a wage subsidy, and a new employer can come along and pick them up. So they're trying to reattach people to the workforce by doing that, by picking up those 16,000.
That's $72,000 a job. Just saying, like, it is. It's not. This ain't cheap.
Well, and interestingly, the Productivity Commission had something to say about the concept of wage subsidies and apprentices a bit earlier in the year. I.e., that mightn't actually be the best vehicle.
Yes, they were saying that wage subsidies can't make up for very much of the costs of employing apprentices. So they were suggesting maybe we need to lower the costs of apprenticeships by looking at the minimum wage. I think that might be more of a kind of pre-COVID thought, though,
yes.
Wage subsidies as they were in the previous budget, rather than these stonking programs of kind of 50% of the apprentices' wage.
Because they would subsidising jobs.
That would go down well right now, cutting the wages of apprentices who aren't paid all that well to begin with.
No, true. Sounds
absolutely perfect in a perfect world.
In a seminar.
Well, in the PC world, it would be perfect.
In a seminar. But anyway, and the other element of this program too is the training component, these short courses, which obviously there's, a fair subsidy for low or no cost training courses across a range of not really clearly specified areas.
Growth areas.
Which brings us back to the labour market.
But. Well, this is actually a policy that was tried during the 91 recession, short-term courses, and they were put on back then. I only know this because there is a very large piece that I've written for the Saturday's Herald and Age, talking to people who dealt with the last recession, and all of them were at the policy coalface. And this was, that's partly what you did. You tried to get younger people in particular trained. The youth unemployment rate in the figures today is at 16.4. It has lifted by 5 percentage points in 3 months. So you can see the policy rationale behind what the government's doing. You put on short training programs, right? We've done that previously. These will skew towards younger people, and they're the ones copping it in the neck in terms of being laid off. this might be a chance. One, get them out of the jobs market.
Yeah.
So, right, exactly. They're not, we don't have to worry about that unemployment, but we'll actually give them some skills. And that's the problem that you find in out of recessions. The longer you're out of the jobs market, the quicker your skills deplete.
But it's not only skills depletion in this environment, because there would be a bunch of kids who, maybe recent graduates from an institution with a particular skill set in conferencing or something, right? Or who have qualifications in an industry that is going to be severely disrupted by this pandemic for quite a long period of time. So even though they've been through a process equipping themselves for the pre-COVID labour market, they then may have to quite quickly recalibrate and equip themselves for the COVID labour market.
Yeah, I don't know if a degree in tourism management is going to help at the moment.
Well, this is the thing that you can actually think of a bunch, if you stop, give yourself 2 seconds to think about this, a bunch of professions that people will have just spent time qualifying for in their various institutions that, may come back on the other side of, when there is actually a COVID recovery as opposed to what we're in now. But, they just might have to think on their feet. And I suppose this gives them options. But still, I guess my query would be, there's nothing wrong with obviously a program of training people to give them different skills, but it doesn't mean there's a job at the end of the skills development. So I don't know, what did your wise men of 1991 have to say about this?
That it's a slow grind.
Mm.
And that's ultimately the issue. If you look at it, there are, about somewhere between 1.5 and 2 million people who are out of work of some description, and then there's 3.5 million still on JobKeeper. That's your problem.
Mm.
There's your real problem. Mm. And you've got all these other headwinds, right? Let's say Melbourne gets on top of its Corona outbreak. Prime Minister Mark McGowan says, "Oh yes, we'll deign to allow East Coasters into the Republic of Western Australia."
Yeah,
that's fine. But then the virus is still out there somewhere. Our international borders are cut off. Our immigration program is absolutely cactus now,
and that's a major driver.
In terms
of
cactus, there were figures this week that from the ABS showing that the number of permanent migrants into the country was 100,000 fewer in June this year than last.
Whoa.
That's an expletive here load of people that aren't permanently in the country, let alone the tourists who are pretty important. But that doesn't include the people who permanently would leave, although Australians are discovering it's a bit difficult to get out of the country, let alone get into the country.
Yeah.
So that migration aspect, you've seen, say, the UNSW job losses that have been announced, that's the higher ed taking a hit. And these things are just going to roll on and just roll on.
Mm.
And that's why recessions are bad things.
Yeah, recessions are terrible things. And despite the Prime Minister's sort of upbeat tone, and I'm not saying this in a snippy way in this instance, because I genuinely think Prime Ministers in these circumstances have a role to play in trying to instill confidence. Because if Morrison stood up and did the full Jeremiah, it's pretty bad. It's like,
you're going to have to include subtitles for Jeremiah. You do know that.
But you know what I mean.
Paul Karp's looking very confused right now.
I am. I'll confess that on tape.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, God. Oh, well, it's one of those but we should do.
Is it a biblical reference?
Yeah, it's a biblical reference.
Okay. Oh, well,
that's it. Like, a biblical reference at The Guardian. My goodness, is it?
I thought it was biblical until you hopped in, and then I thought maybe it was like a 60s pop thing.
How old do you think I am, Paul Karp?
He hasn't started singing yet. Does the hair shirt work?
Oh,
as a reference, right? Yeah. Like, so if you're up there kind of like chest beating and saying, oh, Christ, it's all stuffed. If you do a Paul Keating, we're a banana republic, perhaps. Although, there was
a purpose for that.
It was purposeful. That intervention was purposeful.
It's more like Rudd and Swan through the GFC and then Glenn Stevens and now Phil Lowe from the Reserve Bank. Trying to be optimistic.
Yes, exactly.
And that is actually what you want from your Prime Minister, your Treasurer, and your RBA Governor.
Exactly. So I'm not having a crack at Morrison for being, let's try and, what did he say today? Lift our heads up or something?
Yeah, that's fine.
Something like that, right? Because that's the job, right?
Well, the bigger aspect was the fact that we're winners. And as I noted in our office, this is a country that celebrates a failure on April 25.
Every year, really.
Every year. But
let's be winners for this purpose. Okay, so we're winners. That's fine. He obviously needs to say these things. It's part of the job. But look, the economy, it's pretty bad, isn't it?
And the positives that he showed up were things like, of the 210,000 jobs that were added, 60% of them were women and 50% of them were youth. But, of course, it's from the low base of those having been the groups who were worst hit by the COVID recession to begin with.
Who got smacked.
So, it's easy to say when there's so much potential for recovery in those groups because they've been hit the hardest. But, were the programs being targeted specifically at them on the way down when they were being the hardest hit, or are we just celebrating the recovery in those groups because it's one of the few positive things that you can grab from it?
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. So, again, without trying to talk us to an absolute standstill and make us all just go into our bedrooms, close the door and pull the doona over the head and never come out again, things are bad. They look bad. They look like they're going to be bad for a period of time. I can't remember the last time somebody started talking about a V-shaped recovery. I think that's kind of
gone,
right? And it's bad globally as well, which is also bad for us. So, which brings us to the point about income support. And next week, we expect that the government will provide an update to Australia's economic outlook, will deliver a sort of mini MIEFO, or for want of a better, I don't even know what we call this thing. But anyway, we get data about
a stopping on point on the way to the main budget in October.
Thank you. That's nice, actually. That's like a rest stop.
I like a rest stop, yeah.
A rest stop on the way to the budget in October. So we get a whole bunch of Treasury's latest,
prognostications.
Thank you. That was exactly the word I was reaching for, prognostications about the economy. And we also expect some sort of more broad direction about what happens with JobKeeper and JobSeeker. Anybody got any, we've given up predictions, but any thoughts on that front? What do we reckon?
Well, I think the two things that are guaranteed to change about JobKeeper are people that ordinarily earned less than $1,500 a fortnight will not still be getting $1,500 a fortnight, because that's a way that you can pare the program back without having a political fight, because Labor has signaled right from the start that they didn't agree with that that aspect of it. And the other one is businesses having to re-qualify for JobKeeper, because when it was a six-month program, you qualified once at the start and then you got it every month, provided you had the downturn in revenue at the start. But now to pare it back, they need, some businesses have recovered, so they need to take it off the ones that aren't still feeling the pain. And Sally McManus, the ACTU secretary, has said that the union movement can see the argument to do that, and they wouldn't stand in the way of that. So I think those are the two most painless changes that can be made and likely will be made.
Shane?
The job trainer program, the apprenticeship wage subsidy, is ultimately JobKeeper under a different name.
Banner.
It really is. Yeah. And that's been extended to March.
Mm.
So I think that you've got the giveaway there where the next point will be. So remember, this was all the discussion about the fiscal cliff in September.
Yeah.
Right. Now it's a fairly deep ravine,
yeah,
but it's been pushed back to March. So I think the announcement today is a pretty clear signal in that space about their thinking on time. But ultimately, as a budget nerd, my focus is also on
the forecasts.
Because you will see the biggest deficit ever forecast in these figures, and we are looking somewhere north of $200 billion. And you can see for a coalition backbench that has been talking debt and deficit since Tony Abbott
was a boy.
Well, before Tony Abbott knighted Phil.
Oh, yes. The pre-knighthood
Tony
of history.
Is going to go, oh, my Lord, after a deficit which could be in the year just completed between 90 and 100.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are extraordinary figures. This week, the total gross debt will go past $700 billion. In fact, it has this week because they borrowed another 17 billion on Wednesday or Tuesday it was. So you've got that will coalesce the mind of a fair few coalition backbenchers about, oh my goodness. And then these are only 2-year forecasts they're giving about the economy and the like and the budget deficit. But then it doesn't take much to go, how the hell are we going to repay that? And you can see that argument formulating away right now.
Well, it's been brewing for the last couple of months. Mm. But what do you think, though, guys? Like, I totally agree with that. You know, it's sort of been quite beneficial to Morrison in this crisis. Well, I mean, this is kind of stupid rationale in a way, but it's sort of like the crisis has given Morrison maximum room to move, right? It's enabled the government to shape-shift in full public view and with very limited pushback. I mean, the pushback certainly exists and it's been growing in volume, but Morrison has been given the capacity by the government as a whole to present this idea of the coalition to the public, right? So, but the question in all this is how long is that piece of string? Like, at what point does the sort of internal weight of opinion in the government start to pull the Prime Minister in a different direction? And then you focus on the debt chain, and the deficit, which obviously we all should, because it matters and it's important. But at the same time, you know, what the economy will need is stimulus. You know,
and you've reached that tension because, as we say, this is the rest stop on the way to the October budget.
Yeah.
We've already reported that they are cobbling together a small business package, somewhere around $10 billion, maybe $15
billion. Mm-hmm.
Every economist and his German shorthaired pointer are arguing that you do need, say, in an infrastructure space.
Yeah.
Remember that tax reform discussion that Morrison kicked off as post? That has to be start. You can't delay that because, put it bluntly, you're in October. If you start thinking about an election in the second half of next year, you can't run a tax reform package debate in such a short period of time, especially if you are convinced you're going to be broad and open. It's like there's going to be lots of flowers blooming and dying in that period of
time.
Well,
yeah, it's sort of. I mean, I'm not raising this question because there's a pat answer to it. There actually isn't one, but it's just a sort of an interesting process that Morrison's looking at sort of over the next several months. I mean, at one level, picking up Shane's point about reform, Paul, reform is the sort of it's like a stun gun, you know, with the with the more ideological, let's just say, you know, the bits of the government who will be inclined to fret about increased deficits, debts, etc., you can basically project the holy grail of reform, right, as the payola for why we're spending all this money and why, you know, the end result will be pivoting the economy to a place that we neoliberal characters are all rather happier with, right?
Mm.
But, you know, that's a really difficult thing. Do you think he's got it in him to do this little switcheroo? I'll keep spending the money, guys, but I will give you this, you know, I will give you tax reform, I will give you labour market reform, I will give you this other stuff.
I think that while they have done some things that are very uncharacteristic for a coalition government, like the huge wage subsidy, JobKeeper, they have along the line also been doing some things that are a bit, you know, more red meat to the base type things, like allowing people to access their superannuation early.
That's true.
Industrial relations flexibility, talking about a deregulation and faster approval of projects and that sort of thing. So he had to do the shift on the big things, but there are some of the true colours that you can see all along. And where it will go from here, I think it is largely dictated by what's happening with the health response. Because, you know, a few weeks ago when every state was moving in the direction of easing restrictions, like you were starting to get more tension with coalition MPs saying, you know, oh, we could end JobKeeper even sooner than September you know, take it off certain sectors so that, you know, the hardest hit like tourism can have it for longer. But those arguments fell away pretty quickly when, you know, Victoria had to go in the other direction of locking down.
This is what we're saying, right, that it's sort of like the events give Morrison cover to preserve the fiscal support.
I think it will be enough. Just the backbench gives him a lot more latitude than Malcolm Turnbull ever got. So,
but the question is how long the latitude extends.
It's for now.
Yeah, it is now.
You've quoted Cyndi Lauper talking True Colours. That's like Cyndi was there with Madonna.
And us.
Let's be honest. Who was the bigger power ultimately? Cyndi had the better voice, but Madonna was the one who kept going, powering on, was able to reincarnate, to change her characterization to the masses. Whether Morrison can do that as you develop a new as you develop budget policy, while the audience is going and the backbench is going, oh, hold on, this isn't what I signed up for. I wanted True Colours. Yeah. I didn't want Vogue. Like this, you can see that that tension, and you're exactly right, Murph, is going to continue because, right, we can see to next week for the economic statement. Then we get to October, but then the election really moves up in the lights pretty quickly. Yeah. How am I going to fight this campaign? And if unemployment is still 7-8% next year? It's funny, I was only thinking today, it is less than a fortnight since the Eden Monaro by-election.
Yeah, I know, it feels like about 3 years, but that is true.
Yet in Eden Monaro, like we had all the discussion going in about super popular ScoMo getting people over the line.
Yeah.
It didn't happen.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
So we really, and all the public polls we've seen is still showing it is really tight between the major parties.
Yeah, and the point of that, I mean, you're on a really good roll there, and I'm reluctant to cut you off, but
you do that.
But but I think I might be going where you were going. Anyway, we'll argue about this afterwards if it wasn't. But that idea of what gets you, what wins you an election is part of the story here in the sense of that internal muscling up that will start to happen. We've been in this extraordinary period in Australian politics since COVID of this dialing down of ideology, of partisanship, of conflict, of that kind of sense of a big major party clash. Like we've been out of that. We've been out of that so long we forget that that's actually the foundation of the system. As we move more into an election cycle, I think this is where you're going, love. Yeah, those normal pressures will assert themselves. But anyway, we've been raving on and that's a whole other pod really. So let's cut it off here at Cyndi Lauper and Madonna, which I salute you for.
Well, I saw Cyndi Lauper live. She was fantastic.
Oh, you didn't.
I did at the old Sydney Entertainment Centre and drove down from Bathurst just to see her with some mates, and there you go.
I hate you. I mean, I love you, but I hate you. And Paul knows these musical references.
Yes, yeah.
Exactly. So we've squared our generational circle beautifully. Thank you so much for listening. We really do appreciate it as always. Thank you to Miles Martignoni, who is the executive producer of the show. Thank you to Hannah Izzard. You know what to do. Subscribe, share, tell your friends, etc. We'll be back next week.
I see your true colours.
There was no restraining him. I'm sorry.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.